This computer. So everybody be aware that I'm adding this recording to. So let me move on. Welcome, everybody. Welcome to the continuation of our Wilson House weekend that got abruptly interrupted by a hurricane or tropical storm Henry. Berta, the executive director of the Wilson House, wanted to speak to us for a moment. So I'm going to give her the stage and ask you to speak up, Berta.
Absolutely. Thank you, Malcolm. I really appreciate it. First of all, I want to say I hope everybody got home safely and just in time. And the storm really didn't materialize in Vermont other than a lot of water, but no wind. And so we didn't have any damage to the house, et cetera, that we thought we might have with trees and so forth. Earlier this summer in a Facebook post, I said gratitude is enjoying a great summer in East Dorset. And it certainly is. And the generous donation that you folks gave to the Wilson House just plays right into that. We're so, so grateful. It was a great weekend for all of us. We enjoyed meeting all of you. We hope to welcome you back this time next year. And in the meantime, if anybody's interested in that volunteer academy in the winter, be in touch with me. We would be happy to give you a chance to show your talents at the Wilson House. But again, my thanks on behalf of our board and all of our staff for being with us. Thank you, Malcolm.
Thank you, Berta. And I have not shared with everybody yet, but we, our collection on Saturday afternoon yielded $920 for the Wilson House.
Wow. Yay!
And we gave an additional $1,000 from your entry fees to the Wilson House. So we gave a total contribution of $1,920.
Wow.
So thank you, everybody.
That's awesome. Much, much appreciated. Thank you.
People are asking about the audio recordings of the weekend. The audio recordings of the weekend have not been put into a position that you can download them yet. I will get them sorted out after we complete the event. I need this last one or two sessions to complete the event. Then it will get changed into an MP3 format. It'll get loaded up on archive.org. It'll also get loaded up on another site, and I will email all of you the link as soon as that's done, probably Sunday, somewhere in that time frame. And on that note, I'm going to change my view to speaker view and ask Chris to pick up the thread.
All right. Thank you, Malcolm. I really want to thank Berta and Merrill and all the people that help out at the Wilson House. It really was a great weekend. For anybody that hasn't been there, it really is, it's a destination type of a retreat or workshop. And Malcolm, thank you so much for organizing everything. There was so many moving parts. And you just did a great job. And Steve, what a pleasure it was doing this workshop with you. That it was really an outstanding thing for me to have been a part of. So on Saturday night, Steve started to touch a little bit on step 10. And just quick review. We've fully conceded to our own selves that we're alcoholic and everything that means. We've come to believe that there's a power that can solve this problem and move us forward into some type of emotional, physical, and mental health. We've made a decision to engage in whatever this Alcoholics Anonymous thing is going to look like. Place ourselves unreservedly under the care and protection of God and wisdom in Alcoholics Anonymous. We make a an inventory of the manifestations of self, the major manifestations of self that really have defeated us, our grosser handicaps. We share that with a sponsor, a spiritual advisor. Some people use priests. You know, there's a lot of latitude in that. I prefer, you know, doing it with a sponsor, but that's not absolutely essential. But we share it as honestly as we can, holding nothing back. And then we take a look at the concepts of step six and step seven. You know, we're moving into a relationship, a working relationship with God. As we're doing this, if we've been doing our job, we're becoming aware and we're becoming awake to the fact that there's a power that we're starting to really get in touch with. And we look at step six and step seven and we realize that these handicaps, these difficulties, that we've discovered in the fourth step and anywhere else where we discover them, they're really going to be too large for us to just whittle away ourselves. We're working on this relationship with God, and we become willing to have the character defects that we really find objectionable. We become willing to have those removed, and then we say a prayer for God to take all the good and the bad. You know, Steve said on Saturday night, good and bad. Listen, I didn't know the difference between good and bad. The things that I thought were good when I came into AA ended up being bad, and the things that I thought were bad ended up being good. So I'm a really bad judge of good and bad. So God, take all of this stuff, all this stuff. Give me the power. Give me the direction. Help me grow in effectiveness and grow in understanding and grow in relationship with you. And fit me to be of service to my fellows, because it's dawning on me by step seven that this whole thing is about creating a new Chris who is not just interested in his own plans and designs and how things impact him, but this new Chris is now all of a sudden starting to pay attention to the other people out there in the world. and there's an awakening to the fact that I need to help where I can, and I need to be of service where I can. And then we look at steps eight and nine. You know, a lot of damage in the past. Some of us have more damage than others, but it's absolutely essential, I believe, to make an effort to try to set right the wrongs. It's incumbent to become free. I need to be conscious of the fact that I've done what I could to set right the damage in the past. So, you know, I put a list together. I become willing to make these amends, and I actually go out and I start making them. And by this time, a wholesale transformation is underway, you know, in my personality, in my behavior, in my belief systems. It's a fundamental, you know, change in perspective. An abundant amount of power is flowing in, the spiritual power that enables me to do the things that I couldn't just do on my own self-centered, self-aware, you know, perspective. I'm all of a sudden, you know, speaking and doing all this crazy stuff that I never would have felt comfortable doing before. So there's this power that's coming in. And I'm starting to understand a little bit about freedom too. Being free of the shame, the guilt, the remorse of the past. As I start to clean it up, I become free of the emotional attachment to that past, you know, that painful past. And then we move into step 10. This thought brings us to step 10. What thought? The thought of the promises, the nine step promises, they're amazing promises. You know, one of my favorite is, I can be alone at perfect peace and ease. What a great promise. You know, there are periods of time in my life where I don't know about anybody else, but one of my favorite things to do in between all this service and working and family, you know what I like to do? Nothing. That's what I like to do. I like to do nothing. Just be alone at perfect peace and ease and just be in like a meditative state, you know, sitting on the couch. And my wife will come in and she'll go, "What are you doing?" I'll be like, "Nothing." "What do you mean nothing?" But it's one of my favorite promises. So the concepts of these promises, you know, bring us to step 10, which suggests we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. You know, if all you do is highlight the instructions in step 10 and step 11, it's not a huge heavy lift. You know, this is really stuff that any of us can do. Now, another thing, you know, I'm going to go off on a little bit of a tangent here. One of the things I've really been discovering in this year, and because this big book really is alive for somebody like me, I gain new perspective every time I go through it. I learn more about it every year, every month that goes by. And I'm still in awe of just the quality of this writing and the impact that this can have on the alcoholic, the solution to alcoholism. But what I'm really seeing these days is I'm seeing the mystical qualities of Bill's writing more and more and more. You know, we've entered the world of the spirit is in here. Yeah, that's a pretty mystical statement. You know, like this is deep, deep stuff that can be accessed by anyone who's willing to take the action that sets it up. And it's amazing to me. We vigorously commenced this way of living as we cleaned up the past. So it's giving us some instruction. We've entered the world of the spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. It should continue for our lifetime. And then there's some watchwords. And these go all the way back to like step three information on page 60 to 62, right? It says continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. Those are the major manifestations of the self that had defeated me. And so the self doesn't get completely eradicated. We have to be aware of the manifestations of self. We need to recognize them as such, and then we need to take action. And the action it says we take is when these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. We discuss them with someone immediately and make amends quickly if we've harmed anyone. Now, that's all previous step work, the step exercises that we've done. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance of others is our code. It even stretches a little bit into step 12. You know, the Oxford group, way back when, they understood that sometimes you could get somebody in and you could evangelize the hell out of them. And they were soapbox standing, come to Jesus people like crazy. And a year later, they'd burned out. They'd found other things to do with their time. And so they concentrated on a concept known as continuance. And this was an Oxford group principle, continuance. You know, when I'm talking to my sponsees, I emphasize over and over and over again, consistency in meeting, steps, service, and sponsorship. You know, consistency in those four areas, an equal sign to recover, permanently. If there's permanent consistency, there's permanent recovery in these principles and these steps. So, love and tolerance of others are our code, and we've ceased fighting anything or anyone. Now, when I first read that, I was like, you gotta be kidding. What about my neighbor? What about at work? I'm not going to let him step on me. I had all these reasons why. What about the contentious group conscience where you got to stand up? How do you not fight anything or anyone? And I've got to tell you, I'm at a point today where I can honestly say to you, I don't fight anyone or anything. Maybe I disagree, maybe I've got another perspective, but I'm not engaged in the fight anymore. You know what I mean? Now, here's a good one, especially for the new people. For by this time, sanity will have returned. And then there's a whole series of alcohol promises. The promises that we're going to remain separated safely from alcohol. There's probably 10 of them. People that relapse, I have a feeling for the most part, the relapse occurs because they haven't, taken the action to get up to this step. I think I'm gonna bounce it over to Steve now because, I have a, on Zoom, I can keep talking. So I'm gonna be conscious of that and hand it over to Steve.
Thanks, Chris. Good evening, everyone. Steve Lee, alcoholic. Yeah. I don't suffer from the same self-restraint that Chris does, but, I will do my best. And I want to start also by saying what a great time I had this past weekend, and sorry we had to cut it short, but, so great to spend time with you guys and so great to spend it at the Wilson House. Berta, thank you and your crew for being such wonderful hosts. I'm really grateful for that. And I'm going to say a couple of things that wrap up on step 10 because it just made me think about it as Chris was talking. And one of those is the point he made that as we get here to the 10th step, it says, because we are current, not through with the steps, but we're current in our efforts in applying those and beginning those amends and being current. It says I've entered the world of the spirit, but I've entered the world of the spirit in the same way that I enter the foyer of your home. I am barely in, I've just stepped in and doing 10, 11, and 12 and adding the prayer and meditation and working with others and practicing these principles in all my affairs gives me access to the rest of the spiritual house, And I want to go deeper and deeper in and sit down and make myself at home. And to cease fighting anything and anyone, it says here that we continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. And I will tell you, when I showed up here at step 10 the first time, I was absolutely honed in on looking for that resentment, dishonesty, and fear. I was just looking at it in you rather than in me. I was noticing it still in the folks around me, and I didn't realize that this is really where I want to hold that mirror up. And if I am looking for those things in myself, and not in a self-obsessive way, not in a beat myself up way, not in a be a harsh judge of myself way, but just in the way that I look in the mirror before I leave the house in the morning. I get dressed, and I will tell you, you can't tell it when you run into me during the day, but at some point that morning, I looked in the mirror, checked my outfit out, and said, all right, this will work. I'm taking this out today. This is the package. And sometimes I forget to look closely enough in that mirror to see that I've got a blemish on my shirt or a tear in my slacks. You know, and so all through the day, and I know you guys do this, because I know many of the people on here are as self-centered as I might tend to be, that several times during the day, if you walk by a mirror, you're for sure taking a glance and seeing how you're holding up during the day. And actually, if you're walking down the street, you're liable to look into a window to catch your reflection just to see if this package looks as good as it did when I left this morning. And that's a little bit of what that 10th step is our version of taking that spiritual look at ourselves, you know? And that's particularly true as I begin to full step 11 into this and I'm preparing myself for my day. I'm getting grounded and connected with God and with me as so I can go out and be useful to you. But that can wear off pretty quick. And so I need to check in the spiritual mirror several times a day to see if my, to see if my hair was still neatly combed, but that hasn't been an issue for quite a while. But it's just, that's kind of that spot check inventory that the 10th step talks about, right? So I just kind of wanted to touch base on that. And then when I'm transitioning, and as I said Saturday, it is my belief now, I mean, in essence, we begin steps 10, 11, and actually steps 9, 10, 11, and 12 kind of all at the same time. Now, it's kind of hard to do all of those same things in one motion, but I don't wait till I'm done making amends to begin cleaning up my new mistake. It says I do that as I go about cleaning up the past. And I certainly don't wait until I'm done with my amends before I begin to embrace and embark upon that prayer and meditation, that effort to become closer and grow that conscious contact with God. So these things kind of begin at the same time, right? But the transition from, as I'm transitioning from 10 to 11, the book says that we have carefully followed directions. We've begun to sense the flow of His Spirit into us. So obviously, when I enter the world of the Spirit, I begin to sense the flow of His will into me. And it says I begin to develop this vital sixth sense. So I've got the normal five senses, you know, our human senses of touch, taste, smell, sight, and hearing. Now, I got to tell you, at my age, about three of those is pretty significantly diminished. But I've still got them. But now I'm getting this vital sixth sense, which is a spiritual sense. We talked earlier in the book about the fourth dimension. And when I'm in that fourth dimension, that's when I've entered the spiritual world. That's the spiritual dimension that's added to the three-dimensional world that I'm living in of height, width, and depth. Now we've added the spiritual component. So I got four dimensions in play and I've got six senses in play. Man, I'm armed and dangerous now, right? I am ready to be out in the world in a new way. I have more at my disposal. It radically changes my experience of you, my experience of me, my experience of the world at large. I am seeing things differently. I'm feeling things differently. I have access to things that I did not have access to. They're there. And I got to tell you, as I mentioned the other day, that I'm in and out of that fourth dimension and I am off and on with my access to that sixth sense because self shows back up. And the book will tell me as I'm engaged in this 11th step that I remind myself, and self, by the way, is my ego, my mind, I remind myself many times each day, thy will not mine be done. I have to check in the spiritual mirror to see if I am, if I'm still connected, or have I begun to run the show again? Because in fact, that happens so subtly that I don't even always recognize that it's happened. That's what this self-examination is about. I'm encouraged to take a quick peek many times during the day. And at the end of the day, I've given a review to kind of see how I'm doing in that. So to check myself again before I call it a night. And, but I want to stop and tell a couple of stories that many of you on here who I've spent time with before have heard me tell, but they're the only stories I got. I can make some stuff up and I'm prone to, but, this one's true. And, cause you heard me talk earlier in the weekend, those of you who were there, was my resistance initially to, the idea of a higher power, to the idea of God, to the idea that I might access this higher power, whether there is such a thing or not. I certainly didn't feel like I had access to it. And this 11th step is encouraging me to seek through prayer and meditation to improve upon, to build upon, to initiate this conscious contact. See, this consciousness, I'm walking around spiritually asleep most of the time. And this is telling me, no, let's make a conscious contact, an awareness of this power. Not only have you stepped in to the foyer of the spiritual house, but be aware that you're there. Stop, look around, take it in, and then build upon that. And yet I was uncomfortable with all aspects of prayer and meditation and even the language. And again, I won't revisit all that. I talked about it, but at about 12 years sober, I began to use a phrase regularly that said I was struggling with meditation. And we often hear people talk about that, you know, and it's certainly not universal, but many of us will say that meditation is perhaps a little different for us than prayer. We seem to embrace the prayer aspect of things sometimes a little more quickly than we do meditation. Again, that's not universal, but that certainly was true of me. And I was talking to my friend Danny B, who lives in Houston, Texas, or just outside of Houston in Spring, Texas, that some of you know. And I'm telling Danny about this, and I was going to an AA conference that Howard Polins was going to be at. And Howard was a devoted practitioner of meditation. And Danny said, you need to go talk to Howard when you get there and talk to Howard about your struggle with meditation. So I get out there. It was in Oregon. I go up to Howard and I said, Howard, I'm struggling with meditation. Now, if you know Howard, you can't imagine how excited that made him, because he went, oh, Steve. He rubbed his hands together like a praying mantis. He went, oh, Steve. He said, let's go to my room. So we head off to his hotel room and he said, well, what are you doing now? And I said, well, Howard, I'm really not doing anything now. And he just cackled. He went, oh, I see. Your problem's not technique. It's commitment. You're not struggling with meditation. You're not meditating. He said, are you willing to struggle? He said, because what you're saying, you're not meditating and having a problem with that. Willingness is your problem. Discipline is your problem. Commitment is your problem. He said, are you willing to create a space and time where you can struggle with meditation? And he says, because that's what it's going to take. He said, then you'll figure out what happens in that space and time will evolve. You get to do, you know, it says here in step 11 that it's an individual adventure, right? When we talked earlier in the book where it said that each of us in our own language and from our own point of view talks about how he established a relationship with God. It says there may be a wide variation in the way each of us conceives of and approaches that power. So my approach, I tend to think of my approach as my approach to prayer and meditation. That's how I'm trying to get close to this higher power. And so some of us will, you know, take that quiet time and light some sage or incense and chant. And some of us will, you know, do guided meditations, and some of us will just do some contemplative meditation. It just doesn't matter. AA doesn't care. In fact, I'm encouraged. It says our libraries are a treasure trove. And now we would say Google is a treasure trove of information for us to seek. And I've done a million different things because I don't do any of them well. So I just try them all. And I do believe that I am, I am served well by the effort, at least as much, and by the commitment and by the discipline than I am by what happens in that time. I can't always determine what happens in that space and time, but I can commit the space and time for it to happen. And I have found for somebody who resisted the commitment for so long, that the commitment itself seems to serve me pretty well in a way that I didn't expect. So that's phase one of that for me. That's what this 11th step has, you know, my approach to that has been a little bit. I want to tell one more aspect of this 11th step and then give it back to Chris. It talks about the fact that if I stay engaged in this prayer and meditation, if I constantly throughout the day remind myself many times each day, thy will not mine be done. If when I am agitated or doubtful, I pause and ask for the right thought or direction. And I'll stop here. How many times in your meeting do you hear somebody bring up this part of the 11th step? Boy, when agitated, we pause. And they almost always reference the agitated and hardly ever reference the doubtful. Because we're hardly ever doubtful. We're often agitated. But I have to stop and make sure I fold both of those in there and say, am I? Am I many times each day reminding myself? Am I pausing and saying, oh man, God, what about now? Just reminding myself to invite God into the circumstances of my day. But after a while, our book suggests that in the morning, if I ask, you know, that on awakening, if I ask God to divorce my thinking from selfish, self-seeking, dishonest motives, if that's out of the way, I see the world different. So can I, that's what I'm saying, God, divorce my thinking. Make sure my thinking isn't clouded by those things, by fear, by those seven deadly sins, by pride. Make sure those things aren't coloring the way I'm seeing the world. And if it moves that out of the way, it says my thought life will be placed on a higher plane. And it even says that I will begin to get this intuitive thought. And that I begin to rely upon. Now that's scary. It follows up by saying I'm going to make some big mistakes doing it. But the story I tell connected to this, and again, some of you heard it, but I was headed up to Marty's part of the world about 15 years ago, going to the Ontario Regional Conference. And man, I had a new suit and a big head. I couldn't wait to go. I was excited, and this was a big deal for me. And I got to the airport in Nashville to get on the plane that was going to fly to Detroit and connect to Toronto for this, what I considered this big important thing that made me important. So I go to the gate area in Nashville, and there's a woman, young woman really holding an infant, and the mother was just sobbing inconsolably. And I see this, she's talking to the gate agent, and I see this, but we go on and board. It was a small regional jet, you know, whatever that has, 50, 60 people on. And we get on, and the flight attendant comes on the plane, every seat is filled, and she comes on the plane and she says, this woman's brother has been critically injured in a car accident in Detroit, and she's trying to get to his bedside in the hospital. Would anyone be willing to give up their seat? Well, intuitively, I knew the right thing to do was give up my seat. I mean, immediately I knew that I needed to give up my seat. But I started thinking. My mind got involved, and it was clouded by pride. It was clouded by fear. And as I thought about it, I thought, well, wait a minute. These people invited me. They paid for this ticket. If I don't take this flight, I won't be there in time to do what they invited me to do. My God, if I don't get to Toronto, all of AA in Canada could crumble if they don't get to hear my talk. And, and as I'm thinking about it and thinking about it, pretty soon they closed the door. Nobody gave up their seat and we took off to Detroit. Later that night, I'm standing up on this stage in front of, I don't know, was it Marty, a couple of thousand people, 2,500 people. Giving a talk, talking about spiritual principles, having missed an opportunity to practice a spiritual principle, giving a talk knowing that the guy they thought they invited would have given up his seat on that airplane. And man, it just crushed me. And I made a decision then, and I've done pretty good with this decision. Since then, I've decided to listen to the intuitive voice. I think I make as many mistakes as I made before, but if I'm going to make the mistake today, I'm going to make it listening to the intuitive voice. And it makes me listen more closely when I make mistakes, because again, I will confuse God's voice for my will for God's voice sometimes. But that's okay. That's going to happen on either side of that equation. I'm going to make mistakes, and I've decided to err on the side of trying to trust that intuitive voice. Because when I am, intuition implies that it's not of me. It's not of my brain. It is from somewhere else. And that's why we want to get the channel clear. That's why that prayer and meditation is to get me out of the way so that intuition will present itself in an authentic way. And those choices will be made on the truth rather than some fuzzy version of it I give myself. So, Chris, I'll give it back to you, my friend.
Thank you, Steve. So early on in my experience with Alcoholics Anonymous, I was not a big prayer. So my sponsor was kind of encouraging me a little bit along the way. And when he finally got me to start to do morning and evening prayers, here's how he locked me in. He said, Chris, some days you're going to pray, some days you're not going to pray. I know you. So the one thing I want you to do is I want you to pay attention to how the days go when you pray and how the days go when you don't pray. And within 3 or 4 weeks, I've had a prayer discipline ever since, 30 some years. Meditation, I was more confused about, and my perception of what meditation was colored by a lot of Eastern meditative techniques. I started to read books on meditation. I started to read a lot of books on centering prayer, and really what all that stuff did was give me a real good vocabulary. What really helped me was when I actually sat and meditated. Like so much other stuff in Alcoholics Anonymous, I've always wanted to figure it out. I've always needed to know why. Why do I need to do this? And the thing that was more transformative than anything else for me was just taking the action. Whether I'm good at meditating or not, whether I'm going to struggle with meditation or not, how about giving it a shot? And I absolutely adore my meditative times now. And it's not just upon awakening, and it's not just in the evening. Whenever I get an opportunity to do that, this realm of the spirit that the book talks about is really a comforting place to be. Now, the basic disciplines in step 11 when we retire at night. It gives us a number of instructions. Constructively reviewing our day, look for manifestations of self and how they've screwed you up and try to take action. Upon awakening is very cool. It asks me to look at what's coming up today. What am I going to be doing? Is there going to be any challenges? Do I need to prepare for anything? Is there anything that I need to get done? Is there anybody I need to talk to? Do I owe any of my sponsees a call? It's all constructive stuff. They say an unexamined life is not worth living. And I'll say for an alcoholic, an unexamined life is difficult to live for an alcoholic. So this examination, the questions that they ask us to be aware of and awake to, I find are really, really powerful. There's some other paragraphs in here that really talk about the morning quiet time. In the early Oxford group, it's kind of important to understand this text. What they were doing in the Oxford group as this book was being written. And they all had morning quiet time and they all got together to do it. It was an Oxford group practice and it was a family practice and everyone would engage in this as part of being an Oxford grouper. And I think Bill took what he thought would fit for the alcoholic and left some of the other Oxford group practices aside. And I'm grateful for that today. But they saw it as absolutely essential. This beginning the day with God brought into everything, brought into your operational methodology, And I've got to tell you that I don't go a day without doing this stuff. I'd feel really, really weird. As we go through the day, Steve was talking about this, we pause when agitated or doubtful and ask for the right thought or action. We are no longer running the show. And this is a reference all the way back to our lives are unmanageable. We need a new manager. We're not running the show ourselves. We're trying to practice principles within our behavior. We're trying to look for guidance from God on ways to act. It's just a whole different setup as far as how I live my life. Now, I've said this before, I'll say it again. A good thing is no one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to any of these principles. I'm glad we don't get picked off because we're not perfect. There wouldn't be very many of us left. But a willingness and a commitment to engage in this stuff, I think is all that's needed. There's always great promises when you're doing action steps. It says we're much less danger of excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity, or foolish decisions, which I'm okay with that. A reduction in those things is okay with me. We become much more efficient. And I'll tell you, that's absolutely true. This one kind of eluded me for a while, but the amount of stuff I get done in a month is extraordinary. And it's not like because I'm working hard, because I'm not. It's just I'm more efficient in the things that I do. I don't tire so easily because I'm not burning up energy foolishly. We alcoholics are undisciplined, so we let God discipline us in the simple way we just outlined. Now step 11, there's the instructions in this book, but I also believe that there's a life to this prayer and meditation. There's a life to this guidance. There's a life to this world of the spirit. And I believe we can embrace many, many different faiths, many different philosophies, many different practices. It's recommended that we go out and we ask some priest ministers or rabbis for some good books. I'm a huge reader. I love reading. But this world of the spirit, another mystical reference, this world of the spirit is such a cool place to be. It's such a cool thing to engage in. You know, it's enormously impacted the quality of my life. There's less turbulence. There's less resistance in my life. And amazingly, a lot of the things that used to really drive me crazy either don't drive me crazy or I'm not inviting them into my life. You know what I mean? So this really, really is some cool stuff. And, I'm just going to touch a little bit on step 12. Steve, then I'm going to turn it over to you. I'll do like a paragraph here. Practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. So I think the whole first 11 steps are building an efficient working with others guy. Now I've got something to carry to somebody. In the early days of Alcoholics Anonymous, I used to drive people to treatment, drive people to meetings, make coffee. I did all kinds of stuff because I was told to be of service. And that really is allowing the message of Alcoholics Anonymous, to be there, to supporting the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. But to be able to carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous, I believe I need experience. I need to have gone through these steps, although imperfectly maybe, gone through these steps so that I've had an awakening and I can talk about that awakening as a solution to alcoholism to somebody I'm trying to help. It works when other activities fail. Like what are other activities? How about just going to meetings? You know what I mean? How about using your willpower? How about an abuse? I mean, there's a million different ways that I could try not to drink, and I did try them. But working with others is something. One of the best sayings that people started to say recently, and I wholeheartedly agree with it. You used to hear all the time, you got to give it away to keep it. Well, now you're starting to hear, you got to give it away to get it. And I really believe that's true, because when I started working with other alcoholics, you know what? I was a card carrying, member in good standing all the way in alcoholic in Alcoholics Anonymous. And there was something about that particular effort that I was making that locked me in. You know what I mean? It just locked me into this whole thing. And I've been continuously sponsoring people, since I think it was like October, 1990. I've consistently been sponsoring people and consistently been sponsored. So, you can help when no one else can, because we could talk to an alcoholic and the alcoholic's going to know we're telling the truth. A million people would talk to me about my drinking, and they'd just, from a place of shame or a place of, legal consequences or I'm going to get thrown out of school or whatever. But when an alcoholic talks to me, I know they've been where I've been. And maybe they're in a different place right now. And I'm curious about that. How did you get better? And it makes us uniquely useful. And with that, I'm going to bounce it back to my friend Steve.
Thanks, Chris. Great stuff. You know, you said that you talked about you got to give it away to keep it, and then it, you know, got to give it away to get it. And my friend Bill C. Out in Torrance, California, says you got to, if you don't give it away, you never got it. And I think that's probably pretty accurate too. If I'm not giving it away, I really haven't gotten it. Because that is the end game. You know, it's not lost on me that in the 12 and 12, the first line of the 12 steps says the joy of living is the theme of AA's 12 step. And I think the implication there is that quite, counterintuitively, it is by helping others. It is by giving that we get. You know, we've been talking about that and ever since we showed up at AA, but I spent all of my time before getting to Alcoholics Anonymous, not consciously, but all of my time trying to be self-satisfied, trying to satiate self in some way and trying to, whether that was relationships or, you know, career or whatever I thought was going to give me what was missing. And it was always external in some way and usually about getting you to tell me I was okay. But it was still me trying to get something for me. And there just doesn't seem to be enough for me. Self can't be satiated by self. But conversely, when I finally surrender and begin to try to be of use to other people, I find I get what I was looking for all along. You know, the 12th step, when we get to it, and it says that having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and practice these principles in all our affairs. That's a declaration with two calls to action, right? That having had a spiritual awakening declares that I have arrived at the 12th step having had this spiritual awakening. And having had it, I am now called to action. I am called to action to carry this message and to practice these principles. I'm now ready. That's now we're really in the game. Now it's go out and be engaged in life. And so, if I'm going to carry this message to other alcoholics, what is the message I carry? And today we do it a lot of different ways. We do it the way that Chris and I did over the weekend and are kind of putting a button on here, a bow on at the end of this tonight. But the real message that I carry is that I've had a spiritual awakening and it was the result of these steps. And then I share with you individually or collectively my experience with the steps. And different people, that sounds different coming from different people. Thank goodness. Thank goodness that the same message comes wrapped in a lot of different packages. But at its core, the message is the same. I have a spiritual awakening. Here's how I did it. Here are the steps I took. Here's my experience with those steps. That's how we're working with others. That's what we're doing. I can't tell somebody how to do something I haven't done. Well, that's not true. I can because I have. I can pretend I did something, but I'm not very effective with that, you know. And I said in the 10th step that growing in understanding and effectiveness was, you know, now where I'm headed, that's now my mission. So, this 12th step has me now, you know, working with others, carrying the message, telling the good news, testifying in a sense. But it is all about my experience. Not, you know, it says earlier in the book that if you're an alcoholic that wants to get over it, you may already be asking, what do I have to do? And it goes on to say what I think are two critical things that bolster up what we've said here in the 12th step. It says that's exactly what this book is about. We will tell you what we have done. So the book has the message, the program of recovery that was written in there. I tell you what I have done. I got the cookbook and I'm going to show you how I prepared the meal. And somebody else might come at it a little bit differently. But that's just chance that we get, and we're given some kind of do's and don'ts along the way in working with others. And, you know, I have to tell you that, and I bet I'm not unlike a lot of people on here that have been sober for a while. But maybe I was probably a little more radical than some of you. At about 6 years sober, I was gifted to understand Alcoholics Anonymous at a level that perhaps no other human being understood AA. I not only read the book, I understood the book. I not only read what Bill wrote down, I know what Bill meant to say. And I was just went through a Pentecostal stage. I don't ever pour a dampen somebody who's going through their Pentecostal stage, because I think a lot of times that, boy, if you're going to make a mistake, that's not a bad one to make. But I was kind of harsh. I was harsh for a while. And over the years, as I read the chapter Working with Others, it is a gentle chapter. It is a gentle chapter that gives me and others room to find their way. It's a gentle chapter that doesn't have me beating people up. It's a chapter that says that never talk down to an alcoholic from any moral or spiritual hilltop. You know, I have done some of my worst damage when I've been properly armed with the facts and had the moral high ground. But self was in charge. I had lost the third step aspect of this, and I was running the show. So the information's right, but, you know, when Chris talked a minute ago about that the 11th step being more than the information that's on the page, there's an experience. We're here to have an experience, not an academic exercise, not to pass the test, not to get a master's degree in Alcoholics Anonymous, but to have a spiritual experience that frees me up to live in the world in a way that I can't do it when I'm living on self-will alone. And I don't know, so it's gentle. It says that if he's not interested in my solution or expects me to act only as a banker or for his financial difficulties, I may have to drop him. That doesn't mean I have to finger wag him. It doesn't mean I have to beat him up. I go, you know what, dude, that's not what I'm about. That's not the role I'm here to play. So that's not what we're going to talk about. If you're not interested in this other thing that I bring, my experience with the 12 steps, that's okay. But that's what I'm bringing to this relationship. And, I can tell you, when I got my first sponsor, Frank, he spent the first 20 minutes after I asked him to be my sponsor telling me what he wasn't going to do. It was a long list of stuff he wasn't going to do. And so, I don't usually lead with that, but I always remember Frank doing it. And it says some stuff that we do. And it says that we tell them about Alcoholics Anonymous, him or her. Let me tell you a little bit about AA. Man, have you ever taken somebody to their first meeting? What a cool deal that is. Now, when somebody wanders into their first meeting, I don't know about you guys, but I sometimes hope I find them before they go in, because they don't know what they're in for. You go into some of the groups that I go to and you identify yourself at being at your first meeting. Man, we're going to talk at you for the hour. We're coming at you. And I'll tell a new guy or woman coming to their first meeting, I said, look, come on in here. Here's what's about to happen. At some point, somebody's going to ask, is anybody at their first meeting? You can say yes or not say anything. You can sit quietly. You don't have to do a thing. At the end of the meeting, if you say you're at your first meeting, at the end of the meeting, they're going to offer up a white chip. And man, they're going to stare you down waiting on you to get up for that white chip. And don't worry about it. You can get it or not get it. It's okay. Relax. Because what people told me at my first meetings were, come in, sit down, relax. Relax. You don't have to do a thing to be here. And it is while I was in Alcoholics Anonymous that I learned about Alcoholics Anonymous. You made it so easy for me to leave that it made it easy for me to stay. And trust me, because if you lock the door, all I can think about is getting out. But if the door's open and I can leave any time, I'm liable to stay for a little while. Now, And it says, we tell the new man exactly what happened to me. That's why we talk about our stories in Alcoholics Anonymous. I used to kid, some of you maybe have heard me say that I used to have a much more exciting story than the one I have today. It wasn't true, but it was exciting. And, but it also wasn't very useful because somehow I felt like, you know, I didn't have enough AA street cred in my story. So I needed to make some stuff up in an effort to be helpful to you. But what I know is that my story is the thing of primary value that I bring to Alcoholics Anonymous or the next man or woman that I'm talking to. And my story is not going to resonate with everyone, which is why we all tell our stories. At a certain point, we tell them over coffee. We tell them at our home group. We tell them in 3-minute snippets when we share in a discussion meeting. We tell them from the podium, but we tell the new man exactly what happened to me. And that's going to land where it's supposed to land, and your story will land where it's supposed to land. So that has been, and it takes the pressure off of to just tell about me. Here's what happened. That's not a big deal. Here's my story. And I think that's important. It says if he doesn't want to stop drinking, don't waste your time trying to persuade. Now, we've all got friends and people we care about that we have spent a lot of time trying to persuade them. And I get that because I love them and care about them. But this is not saying we don't care. This isn't kind of that dismissive. Hey, dude, if you're not interested in this, then, you know, then you need to go do some more drinking. It just says, don't waste that energy. I have zeroed in on a guy that I was going to help and walked by a dozen other people that, you know, that wanted help. While I'm trying to force feed a guy who is uninterested. And in general, I'm just going to try to find those who are interested in getting sober. And then comes the, you know, after all of this talk about working with others, when I get to the 12 and 12, it says, now comes the toughest question yet. I'm thinking, are you kidding me, man? Dude, I've been working my ass off here in AA. I've done some hard stuff. I've gotten all the way back here. I've been working with others, and now you're saying here's the toughest question yet. What about the practice of these principles in all my affairs? What about my family life? What about my work life? What about as a parent? What about as a husband? Whoa. Now the rubber's meeting the road. Can you practice these principles in all your affairs? And what are the principles? You know, Chris told us when we got started on Friday night, Chris said that AA's 12 steps are a group of principles, spiritual in their nature, if practiced as a way of life, will expel the compulsion to drink and enable the sufferer to live a life that's happily and usefully whole. So the principles I'm practicing are the 12 steps now in my daily life. Now embedded, we have all seen a full scope of those. Everybody here, I know, because we're preaching to the choir, somewhere in your AA file, you've got that list that has the principle next to the step, right? First step, what, you know, is it, oh, honesty. Second step, open-mindedness. Nope, on this list, second step is will it. You know, everybody's got it, and they're different. Here's what I will tell you. I don't think you can put a wrong spiritual principle next to one of those steps. They all fit, all of them. This isn't linear. This is a spiritual program. This is a stew that all mixes in together. It's all okay. But the 12 steps themselves are principles. So now am I going to practice turning my will and my life over the care of God? Am I going to practice this ongoing self-examination in all my affairs? Am I going to practice this ongoing restitution and admission of wrongs? Am I going to regularly go back to God and say, man, take this shortcoming. It's getting in my way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Am I going to go through that day in the 10th step? And am I going to keep trying to connect with God? Am I going to keep working with others? Am I going to be engaged on this and an ongoing? I love what Chris said. Am I going to be consistent? You know, am I going to work AA on Tuesdays and Thursdays? My attendance sometimes looks like that. But see, we so often confuse meeting attendance with my engagement in my recovery. Meeting attendance is critically important, but it is not the limit to the engagement in my recovery. I have guys that I sponsor that travel a lot whose life circumstances don't allow them to make 4 or 5 meetings a week. And if we're not careful, some of us folks will make them feel like they're not working a good program. Look, if you're a single mother that's got a job and 2 kids and are going to that job and raising those kids and getting the 2 meetings a week and staying sober and you're practicing these principles in your daily living, man, that's hero status stuff. The people, guys like me and Chris, you know, we get to run around because, you know, first of all, I'm probably being irresponsible in some area of my life. But you know what I mean? People that are making this work, that is the podium guys are certainly not better AA members. And it just doing that, being in the grind day to day, that's the real stuff. And I just have so much respect for people that are doing that. And then I asked myself, I went to my sponsor, Frank. You know, I was about 6 months sober and I said, Frank, I think practicing these principles in all my affairs is putting me at a competitive disadvantage in the marketplace. Said, I'm not sure everybody understands that these are the rules we're playing by. And he said, well, Steve, he said, if you're asking me if you're gonna not be able to close a particular deal or get a piece of business because you won't entertain in a certain way, or you won't turn a blind eye, or you won't shave a corner. He said, absolutely, anecdotally, you're going to not get particular pieces of business in what I was doing. He said, but, and he didn't promise me that I was going to be, you know, president of a Fortune 500 company. But he said, but if you will consistently, to use Chris's term again, says, if you will consistently live by these principles, this way of life, he said, you have no idea the number of people who have quietly chosen not to do business with you. He said, it's probably not even about your drinking. Some are about your drinking, but other folks just go, hey, it's just not my kind of guy. You're just putting off a vibe that doesn't attract them. He says, if you will commit to this over time, if you'll play the long game, and that's what we do in AA, we play the long game. He says, the people that need to be drawn to you will be drawn to you. And that's been my experience. I'm here 32 years later. I am certainly not president of a Fortune 500 company, but I continue to be able to keep my bills paid and live a life that I'm happy with, and I'm able to sleep 8 hours a night without having done anything that I am ashamed of or embarrassed about or has ethical challenges. And if I make a screw, if I screw up in one of those areas, then I got a 10th step to clean it up with and a sponsor to talk to about it and then make that right. So we just get here, this joy of living. We are given this opportunity at the 12th step. You know, it is at the end of the chapter in the 12 and 12 on the 12th step that it gives me some information that I've taken to heart. And that's what I'll close with and give it back to Chris. It talks about, it gives a whole list, a run on sentence of things. It's the longest sentence in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I can't repeat them all, but it talks about, you know, problems well accepted or solved with God's help. It talks about love given being surely returned. It talks about not having to be especially distinguished amongst my fellows. It talks about a whole host of wonderful gifts. And it said, these are the permanent and legitimate satisfactions of right living. permanent and legitimate satisfactions, which implies, and correctly so in my part, that I have unknowingly, unconsciously, being spiritually asleep, spent all my time seeking the illegitimate gifts of life. Not permanent and legitimate, but temporary and illegitimate. I'll use this analogy, and I love a donut. I mean, I love a donut. But every time I eat a donut, I'm every bite of that donut I enjoy. And the moment that donut is gone, I go, God damn it, I wish I hadn't eaten that donut. You know? Every time, because I go, now the donut's gone. The pleasure's gone. There's no residual value. There's no nutritional value. There's going to be a price to pay. And I traded these permanent and legitimate satisfactions for a temporary relief. And if you think about it, I did that with a drink and a drug so many times that I'm unwilling to feel uncomfortable for a little while. And I will trade this life that I have for a moment of seeming relief. But today I want to seek the permanent and legitimate satisfactions of right living. And then it says true ambition isn't what we thought it was. See, true ambition isn't what I thought it was. Those things that I was aiming at, what I was ambitious about. True ambition isn't what we thought it was. True ambition is the sincere desire to live usefully and walk humbly under the grace of God. Now that is what I begin to see that I'm really looking for in this world. And it took all the way from step one to the very end of step 12 for me to get even a glimpse of that. And that is what provides me the permanent and legitimate satisfactions to live humbly, live usefully under the grace of God. Thank you guys so much for having me again tonight. It was great to be back with everyone. Chris, pick it up, buddy. Take us home.
Thank you so much, Steve. Thank you. In this chapter, that was terrific. In this chapter, there's a lot of guidance. There's a lot of instructional material in this chapter for working with others. There's on the first visit, the second visit, speak to them about alcoholism, become convinced that they're alcoholic like you. And then it says, tell them exactly what happened to you. Show the spiritual feature freely. And then it talks about how you are to describe the changes in you, the spiritual awakening through the steps, the changes. And I think this is such good guidance. Early on in Alcoholics Anonymous, there was a lot of confusion in my life. I wanted to help. I felt like I needed to help people right out of the gate. Looking back on it, what I was doing was I was encouraging people to stay sober. This book is explaining to us that you can walk hand in hand with somebody into recovery. So I think there's a time and a place to help people stay sober. I love the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm no longer the Pentecostal banging the big book guy. Don't get me wrong. I try to carry a message of depth and weight. But when I'm in an AA meeting, I'm inclusive. I mean, look, it takes a certain amount of time, maybe a certain amount of pain, to get them to a point where they're going to engage in a serious recovery process. We need to allow them that time. But if you're going to be asking me to work with you, if I'm going to have one-on-one time with you, if you're going to ask me to sponsor you, what I'll usually do is I'll sit down and I'll go over a lot of material that's in this chapter. If I'm going to ask you to go to any lengths, I want to offer you the dignity of understanding what any lengths is. if you're going to work with me, these are the things that we're going to do. And, and uh, not everybody that asks me to sponsor them gets through the 12 steps, and that's fine too. I don't think I've ever fired anybody. I think what happens is when I continue to encourage certain spiritual exercises that are part of our 12 steps, and someone is balking or someone is, you know, not moving forward, you know, they've come to the conclusion that this particular step or this particular exercise is not going to be necessary in their case. I can't be the person convincing them of that. You know, alcohol sometimes has to be. Maybe they don't need to go through the steps. There's a lot of people that show up in Alcoholics Anonymous that still have what we would describe as power. And you know, I mean, I'm one of these all are welcome guys, you know, a singleness of purpose, but, you know, I can't read your mind. I don't know. I'm not going to make a judgment on your alcoholism. But if I'm working it with you, I'm going to continue to encourage these things. As far as practicing the principles in all my affairs, never did a perfect job with it. And I'm glad that Alcoholics Anonymous isn't about making us perfect. Because I don't know about anybody else. I don't even like perfect people. You know, you ever have a perfect person come over your house and make you look bad? You know, why aren't you more like Henry next door? He's in law school. You know, screw Henry. So I've never been a big fan of perfect, but certainly it's helped me to become useful. So when I showed up in Alcoholics Anonymous, I was an electrician. I was like a bad electrician. You know, like I would blow stuff up. I would electrocute myself on a daily basis. It was just the wrong career for somebody that shook like crazy, you know, and always was hungover. So I get sober and I start, you know, I plodded my way into the practice of the principles. It wasn't like switching a light switch. You know, it slowly dawned on me that this stuff is in my best interest. You know, but over the course of time, you know, I became more honest and I became more dependable. And the things that people, that are hiring you and paying you, are looking for in an employee. I started to get jobs, just better. Every job I got was a better job. You know, I went from a really bad electrician to someone who was running a large department in pharmaceutical manufacturing and research and development sites. You know, always waiting for them to figure out the enormity of the mistake they made putting me in charge. But again, kind of intuitively realizing I wouldn't be in that job if I couldn't handle it. But you know, there's always that self-esteem stuff. That's remarkable to me. I was always the family member that you didn't want around. So when I first got sober, I remember telling my sponsor, you know, I come from a family. We're not real close. Phil, we're really not really a close family. You know, we eat in different rooms, you know, at Thanksgiving. And, you know, I tell them all these stories. And, I'm sober a while and I start to realize that my family goes on vacation with each other. All of them, they drive around the country. They go to Europe. They just don't bring me. You know what I mean? And so slowly it takes family sometimes a longer time than it takes other people. But, you know, slowly I started to become like the go-to guy for problems or help. Or, hey, Chris, what do you, you know, I've got this challenge, you know, what do you think? And believe me that was, you know, not what they were doing in the 80s. So the practice of these principles becomes practical in my life to improve my quality of life. It really does. You know, I want to end with this. So I'm working with a sponsor now, and I love him to death. He's, you know, ridiculously spiritual and into all kinds of stuff, had all kinds of teachers, you know, those are the kind of guys I like. And, And he gave me three practices. He gave me three very, very simple practices. And when he gave them to me, I thought they were stupid. Like I normally think, you know, this stuff is stupid until I try it and I actually see the benefit of it. You know, pay the money back? That's stupid. But you actually do it and then now you get it. You know, you learn things in hindsight. So he gave me basically three spiritual practices, and they're very, very simple. You know, one of them was, Chris, every time you're conscious of it, tell yourself what you're doing. I'm like, what do you mean by that? He goes, well, you know, just say, I am walking out to the car. I am getting in the car. I am driving to the store. Just say that. And I'm like, all right. So I start doing it. And the benefit of this particular exercise is, it keeps me present. It keeps me in the now. Like, what am I doing now? And it's a very, very simple thing, and it changed the way I looked at a lot of things. Another exercise he gave me, because I was talking to him about some challenge, you know, like some stupid thing, like, you know, my wife wants me to do all this stuff. I'm real bad at it, blah, 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 blah. He goes, well, Chris, do what I do. And I go, what's that? He goes, ask God for help. So I go, give me an example. He goes, well, you know, all right, I'm making my bed. God help me make my bed. You know, he works out on a horse farm. So he's got, you know, God help me go get water for the horses. You know, help me go get hay for the horses. Just is try to be aware and try to ask God for help. And that sounded stupid. But I started to do it. And the benefit of that was, it was an exercise in the consciousness of the presence of God. And so I'm God conscious more than I used to be. And then he gave me a third exercise. And I love this one. He goes, Chris, every time you're outside and every time you become conscious of it, look up. I'm like, yeah, and what else? He goes, no, just look up. And so I started doing it. And where it led me was, I became aware that, you know, I'm a biological being having a spiritual awakening on this planet, you know, in the middle of God's creation, in the middle of God's playground. And it was an exercise in gratitude. Just every time I looked up, I was grateful for having this opportunity of a life with all of you, you know? And so those are three exercises that I play around with. Remember, the spiritual life is broad, roomy, and all inclusive, and we find our own way, and we own our own spiritual journey. And we own our own consciousness of the presence of God in relationship with God. And you know, that's all I have. I absolutely love the Wilson House. I love the Zoom. Steve, again, thank you. Malcolm, again, thank you. Thank you, everybody, for being here tonight.
Thank you, Stephen. Thank you, Chris. You guys have been awesome. It's been a great weekend. Delayed the end of it a little bit. So once again, I'm gonna drag out my, prayer that I like to drag out at these particular times, and we'll end with that. So let me read this prayer. God, grant me the courage to match calamity with serenity, to walk your path in all aspects of my life, to do what is right when it seems impossible, to go wherever this journey takes me, to face and accept my human failings, to answer for my actions, to be the person you would have me be. God, grant me the strength to go out from here and do your bidding, to do the next right thing regardless of the consequences, to be patient and tolerant, to see the good in all that cross my path, to accept your world as it is, not as I would have it, to shine your light where there is only darkness, to help guide my fellow alcoholics and addicts upon their journey, to provide hope where there is despair, remorse, and fear. God, help me to be grateful for the guidance you give me each day, for the peace and serenity you have brought to my life, for the patience and tolerance you have taught me, for the wonderful people you have brought to me, for the opportunity you have given me to share your word, for the quiet sense of right and wrong I used to lack, for the understanding of the tools left for us by Bill and Dr. Bob, for the fellowship of the Spirit passed on to us by all in AA who have gone before, for the willingness to see and accept your world. God, I ask you to stay with me and guide me upon this journey. Help me to be free from selfishness, self-centeredness, dishonesty, and fear. Help me to keep my eye on the beacons of truth you have set out for me. Help me to find humility and kindness. Most of all, God, help me to be a compass when my fellow alcoholics and addicts lose their way. Amen.
Amen.
Everybody unmute yourself and thank Stephen.
Amen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You too, Malcolm.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Chris.
Amazing. Thank you.
We'll see you all at the next place along this journey.
Yes.
Thanks, Malcolm. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, Malcolm.
God bless. Godspeed.
Hi, Liz.
Malcolm, about those two other things, how do you find out about those?
You're in my email chain, so I'll make sure you get the information, Lynn.
Okay.
I would like it too, Malcolm. This is Janet McAnally, if you could.
Okay. I think you are in that email chain as well, Janet.
Okay, great.
You were at the event, so I'm sure that you'll be included.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for this. Much appreciated.
You're welcome.
Take care.
Thank you, everybody.
Bye. Thank you
so
much.
Thank you.
Good night, all.
Good night. Laura.
See your smile, hi, Kim.
Hi, everybody. Hey, Bill, how are you? Hi,
I'm
everybody.
Good. You guys hey, thanks, night. Everyone.
Oh, all my right. God, it's Bill.
Bye-bye, everybody.